Your site-specific knack, I file under attack. The only time you cross the line is when you're crossing back. Have you changed the song we were singing? Or have I just lost the air? If I said your behavior suffocates, would you care? Don't stop if it feels good, do it. Don't stop if it feels good, do it. Don't stop if it feels good, do it. Don't. You found the perfect spot for Jimmy's wicked thought. It's in my permanent collection now. Sometimes life's not fair. To think you almost apologize. Put her there. Don't be sad at all. I'm about to get killed off. The writing's on the wall. If you believe everything that you read, turn to the only thing that you ever meet. If it feels good, do it. Don't stop. If it feels good, do it. Don't stop. If it feels good, do it. Don't stop. If it feels good, do it.
Sloan there with Don't Stop If It Feels Good Do It. Before that, Watts with The Night the Lights Went Down. The Jesus and Mary Chain with Far Gone and Out. Ride with Dreams Burned Down. Primal Scream with Rocks. That's a new record they just came out with. It's the Memphis original recordings of Give Out But Don't Give Up. And we started the whole set off with Black Grape and In the Name of the Father.
The life of every child is precious. If you care for a child or teenager with a disability and have limited income and resources, they may qualify for monthly cash payments through the Supplemental Security Income Program, or SSI. Call Social Security.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
All right, let's start today. I guess we're calling this game, Do You Buy It? We've talked before about the people who have sort of softly come out against Donald Trump, who were previously associated with him. We've also talked about the people who criticize him, but then when it really comes down to it, they go, I'd vote for him again. Earlier this week, William Barr, Trump's former attorney general, said the 2020 election stuff Trump was saying was BS. He was out of control and he brought out a clown show of lawyers. And then when Savannah Guthrie said, OK, but if he's the nominee, are you voting for him? And he's like, well, I'm not going to vote for a Democrat. So that's horrifying and disgusting. I have a different example for you today. This is one of Donald Trump's former White House press secretaries, Stephanie Grisham. My opinion is that she, when it comes to Trump, has truly denounced him in a way where she's saying she's out. And here in this particular clip on The View, not on The View, on some other show, maybe this is The View, she says he's a con man and I'm sorry and I don't want people to vote for him. What do you guys think?
But my point is now, I messed up. I am sorry. I will say that till the end of time. But I want to give people an off-ramp. And I'm going to do everything I can to educate people, not talk down to them, educate people about who he really is,
yeah.
That he is a con man, that it is a cult-like thing, and that it's okay to just get off.
So you would.
Okay. It is The View. So Listen, I'm not saying let's go out and elect Stephanie Grisham to anything. She's not running for anything, as far as I know. But if we're going to kind of categorize these things, you know, Michael Cohen, who we've had on the show, he genuinely has denounced Trump fully and is cooperating to the extent that he can to hold Trump accountable. And I buy that he's off the train completely. William Barr, I mean, I think he's trying to sell books. I think he does recognize Trump was nuts, but at the same time, he even said I'd vote for the guy. Grisham strikes me as being closer to Cohen than to Bill Barr, with the important difference that Michael Cohen has said, I've always been a Democrat and I'm back to being a Democrat. Stephanie Grisham, as far as I know, is still a Republican. And the off-ramp she's talking about is an off-ramp more than likely to people like, I don't know, Mitch McConnell. Mitt Romney, maybe, or who knows what. So I'd put her closer to Cohen. I do think she's sincere. But at the end of the day, I still don't want her deciding who the president is. Let me know your thoughts. What do you think about her level of sincerity? Let's follow up about school lunch. This story is just vile. We've talked about Republicans and school lunch before. The news is that Mitch McConnell is reportedly again opposing free school lunch. The Washington Post reports that Mitch McConnell is opposing an extension to the free school lunch program. This comes as Congress is deciding what to include in the upcoming government funding package. You may recall that, again, we are in the situation where the free school lunch, the comprehensive free school lunch program that was started and expanded during the pandemic, has an expiration date on it. And now, there are Republican lawmakers, including Mitch McConnell, who oppose including that in a new government funding package. I have to tell you that this is one of the most vile things. Like, you really have to understand the degree to which these people cannot empathize with anybody else. And we've talked about opposition to free school lunch from the right wing before. Remember this clip from October where Fox News anchor Martha McCallum is like, listen, if kids think school lunch is free, then I guess something very bad would happen.
One of the things that kills me is that now that, you know, there's a free lunch program in New Jersey and it's for everyone, even if you don't need help to send your child's lunch to school.
Wow.
So those kids are all going to grow up thinking, well, lunch is free, right? And then God help the person who comes along and tries to take that away, Larry.
These kids might grow up thinking school lunch is free. Why shouldn't it be? Why shouldn't it be? In a literal sense, of course, food's not free. You understand this. I understand this. People pay property taxes and it funds schools and you're paying for school lunch. Sometimes property taxes include trash pickup. The trash pickup isn't literally free. It's paid for through your property tax. Okay. Sometimes it's good when we pay for things with taxes, and sometimes it's not so good. So, for example, many of us would say, I don't love that my taxes, without any option, I mean, okay, you know, we could replace everybody to end the military industrial complex and only elect people who won't support it in any way. It's not realistic that that's going to happen overnight. I don't necessarily love tax money going to some of the weapons that it goes towards. OK, fine. When we're talking about school lunch, first of all, it's so cheap. It's so cheap. Secondly, it's really stigmatizing. A lot of schools still have this colored lunch ticket program. At my elementary school, you know, 90 years ago, if you paid full price for lunch, you got a green ticket. And if you got the discounted lunch, you got a yellow ticket. And if you got free lunch, you had, I think it was like a red ticket or whatever. It's extraordinarily stigmatizing to do that in elementary schools in a way that can be really damaging to kids. And when they say, we can't have kids growing up thinking that it's free. If property taxes cover school lunch, what's the big devastating realization that kids will come to? It's just, oh, the lunch is free. We pay for it through property taxes. Oh, all right. Well, I understand it. School is mandatory. You have to be there, but they don't have to give you food at no additional cost at the point of purchase. You have to be there and your property taxes pay for it. There are kids depending on the school lunch in order to eat, and Republicans don't want to do it, either because they say we can't afford it because we obviously can, or because they think that children are going to be taught some bad lesson. Is it a good thing to be thinking that if you're a kid in school, to be thinking that whether I eat depends on anything other than just, am I here? Can my parents afford it or not? Did Mitch McConnell extend the program or not? Oh, well, you get lunch and you don't. It's absurd. It's absurd. And of course, it's not even really free. It's just prepaid. That's really all that we're talking about. And when you step back, if you are a politician and you think so-called free school lunch is a problem, then you're not even in the right universe. You're not even in the right galaxy when thinking about the problems that we have. And Mitch McConnell now joining the train and saying, no, 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 we can't allow this to happen. School lunch should just be free, period. And by free, I mean prepaid through property taxes, as it already is, but for everybody rather than just some people. News continues to be not so good for Donald Trump's former election fraud lawyer, so-called Sidney Powell. Listen to this. Texas State Bar tells court Sidney Powell committed professional misconduct with post-election lawsuits and could be disbarred. I'm taking pleasure. I know that, you know, one of my principles is I don't take pleasure in the death of others. I don't take pleasure, you know, et cetera. When people have done really bad things, like the corrosive nature of Sidney Powell's so-called election fraud lawsuits, she deserves to have consequences. And we are now learning far-right attorney Sidney Powell may soon face disciplinary action ranging from a reprimand to disbarment for her post-election lawsuits alleging widespread election fraud. As the disciplinary committee at the State Bar of Texas filed a petition in state court alleging that she committed professional misconduct through her efforts to overturn the election. I love it. There should be consequences. The only thing is the consequences should go above Powell. They should get to Trump. They should. I don't think they will. But consequences are in order here. Key facts. The Commission for Lawyer Discipline, a committee of the Texas Bar, asked a district court in Dallas County to issue a judgment of professional misconduct against Powell and determine and impose an appropriate sanction. Can she even work as a lawyer at this point in the sense of would anyone even hire her? Like, I guess there's probably some Trumpists or maybe people who have absolutely no idea anything about her who would still hire her. But it seems like her career is dead in the water anyway from the self-humiliation that she participated in. The committee alleges Powell violated rules of professional conduct that prohibit attorneys from making false statements, using false evidence, bringing frivolous lawsuits, taking a position that causes unreasonable delays or burdens, and engaging in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, or misrepresentation. She kind of did all those things. But what the complaint points to are her lawsuits in battleground states alleging fraud, the argument being that she had no reasonable basis to believe the lawsuits were not frivolous. I tend to think that that's true. Now, I know that there are lots of people who insist Sidney Powell is a true believer. She really believed all of the stuff. The election was stolen. by Joe Biden and affidavits and all this different stuff. Okay, there's a lot of people. I think that she plausibly believes there was some funny business, but I don't think there's any way in hell that she thought the specific lawsuits she was filing were actually valid. I just don't think so. Let me know your thoughts. Find me on Twitter at @dpacman. And also, tomorrow is a Trump rally in Florence, South Carolina. If you live in that area and you'd like to be our correspondent at the rally and you can get there and you've got, you know, a phone and a microphone so you can do some interviews for us, we'll pay you. Okay. info@davidpacman.com. Subject line, Florence Trump rally. Let me know if you'd like to go. We're going to hire someone to be there. And I would love to hear from you if you'd like to be that person. The David Pakman Show is a viewer and listener supported program. The daily podcast and the YouTube clips and the radio show and the TV show and the live streams and the entire thing is primarily funded by you. You can sign up at joinpakman.com, get access to the bonus show, get access to a commercial free audio and video stream of the show, and get that 6 hours before everybody else. Isn't that just the best? Sign up at joinpakman.com for instant access. Let's hear from the most important people involved with the show. Obviously, I mean the audience. We take calls via Discord at davidpakman.com/discord. Let's go to Vince from Wisconsin. Vince, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello, David. I was just wondering, what do you think, what punishment do you think the ringleaders of the coup should receive? Like Trump, Holly, Cruz, Giuliani, these people?
Depends what the, I mean, listen, this is a question really for prosecutors. You have to figure out, first of all, did they commit any crimes? If they committed crimes, what can you prove in court? And so I just don't know. And this is part of why I've said I don't think that the general inciters are going to suffer any consequences, because it's not clear to me what specific crimes you could actually successfully charge them with. We all know that they spent months fomenting an environment where they had ignorant, rage-filled people weaponized and ready to go completely crazy on January 6th. But I don't know that that is a clear path towards any specific charges, which is why I don't think they're going to be charged.
Do you think that maybe a part of a reason why prosecutors won't charge is that they might be afraid of the cult coming to essentially harm them and their families?
No, I don't think so. I think that I've said before, I believe if one prosecutor charged Trump, there would be more prosecutors that would be ready. But I understand that there are likely prosecutors who don't want to be the first to charge a former president, because that is a really, really big deal in the context of American democracy. But no, I don't think the reason they aren't charging these people is because they're worried about their families. I just think that it's not completely clear they think any of the charges will stick.
Yeah, I just read the other day that the New York charges are sort of fizzling out. Nothing's really going on with that.
Well, but that's a different situation. What appears to be happening with the Manhattan DA is that prosecutors quit because they became aware that the DA didn't really seem to have any intention of charging Trump. And they were like, well, what the hell are we doing investigating that? That's a different situation, I would say.
Right. Well, the DA doesn't want to be the charge either. So,
right.
I mean, it just seems like, you know, in this country, you only get consequences. Rich and powerful people only receive consequences if they screw over other richer and more powerful people.
There are definitely there's a two-tier justice system in the United States. That's for sure.
Right. And even if I think they should at least try, even if it doesn't succeed, but because then you set the precedent that you can be charged, you can prosecute them.
That's up for debate. I mean, if you don't believe the charges will stick and that they will go anywhere, there's risk both personally to prosecutors and systemically to starting to charge former presidents with stuff you don't really think you can get them on. So I don't know. I think some legal experts would disagree with you on that.
Yeah, if it's a low chance, then maybe they shouldn't. But if it's a decent chance, then it might make future presidents, think twice about doing this stuff.
I agree. If you think you can demonstrate it in court, even if you're not going to get a guilty verdict, but if you think you can seriously demonstrate in court the wrongdoing, which often includes proving state of mind, which can be tough, I completely agree with you, then charges should be brought.
Yeah, it's just disheartening to me, but thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. That's Vince from Wisconsin. Let's go next to, where are we going next? Let's go to Peleg from Israel. Peleg, you are on the air.
Hello, David. It's my second time calling in.
I remember.
Last year on the October 17th show. Yes. Talking to you. It's great to talk to you again.
Likewise.
So my question is more general about in developed countries, or in developing countries, I should say, what do you think is the best way to strengthen democracy there and build up a system that is desirable?
Are you saying many developing countries are democratic? So can you clarify? Are you saying in particular developing countries that are not democratic?
Yes. Also, helping them economically to build social democracy there, and generally a desirable economic system.
I mean, the question is, it presumes that we need to be helping every country. I mean, there's lots of countries that are developing, but we're doing business with them. We're helping them in terms of industry by buying things from them. I don't know. I think it's a little presumptive to assume we need to be doing more necessarily. I think that I would first say, prove to me we should be doing anything.
Oh, I meant through trade and aid, not anything interventionist.
Oh, OK. Yeah. I mean, listen, then we continue trading. I don't know. I mean, listen, it starts. What ideas do you have for how through trade you'd like to see us support democracy in another country? What's an example?
For example, if you look at it's called the Commitment to Development Index, you could see that it's pretty interesting. The social democracies, and it's an index that measures how much a country is committed to helping developing countries. And you look, and it has six metrics, if I remember correctly. I don't remember all of them, but it's trade, aid, technology, health. All of these factors, I think, are very important. And I don't remember the U.S. being high up there in the least, but I remember Denmark being pretty high there. So, mm-hmm. so that was something I was interested in. Can I ask you another question?
Sure.
So do you have any book recommendations?
Sure. I mean, what fiction, nonfiction, what genre?
Economics, or nonfiction economics. I'm sorry. I should specify.
Nonfiction economics. Let's see. What have I read recently? I read a book by, Esther Duflo and Abhijit Banerjee called, what was the name of the book? Hold on a second. This was a good economics book. It wasn't. Oh, Good Economics for Hard Times. I would recommend that. That's a sort of somewhat new economics book I've read that I thought was quite good. Also, Angus Deaton recently wrote, let me see if I can find the name of the book, The Great Escape. Which is a really good book. The Great Escape by Angus Deaton. It's actually 9 years old. And then also Deaths of Despair by Angus Deaton. I would recommend both of those as well.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with Angus Deaton. It's pretty interesting. And I've yet to read these books, but I'll be sure to read them.
Beautiful.
Okay, thank you.
How's the weather in Israel? Is it nice?
Weather in Israel is pretty bipolar. I mean, we had pretty huge rains, which is pretty good for Israel because it's a pretty dry country. You know, the Kinneret, which is the sea or the lake, I should say, shrinking. But then we have rain, so it's getting bigger. So that's a good thing. But then we had like a period of a month or so where it was like relatively hotter. And then the rains came back yesterday. I don't know what's happening.
Wow. Are you in what part of the country are you in?
So I am in Ashkelon, near Ashkelon, I should say. But it's sort of in the south center of the country, but then I went to uni from the IDF. I went to uni; they subsidized it, so that's in the north, like that's in the other half of the country. So, and now I went back for a month back to my home, and I'm gonna go back in the 20th of March, back to the Technion.
Well, a lot going on. I think Wolf Blitzer's from Ashkelon. I don't know why that's in my mind. I think, but don't quote me on that, Peleg. Okay, I appreciate the call.
Okay, have a good one.
All right, there's Peleg from Ashkelon. Let's go next to Daniel from Taiwan. Daniel, welcome.
Hey, David, how are you?
I'm doing well.
I was just, what would you tell somebody that's in Taiwan that's increasingly maybe concerned about being invaded by an authoritarian regime that shall not be named?
Yeah, I would be very, very much sensitive to what may become a precarious situation. I mean, listen, I said weeks ago, I think China's paying attention to what's happening in Russia and Ukraine to see what is Russia allowed to get away with. And as a result, what might China be allowed to get away with when it comes to Taiwan? I don't want to say I'm expecting aggression, but I am thinking it's quite plausible that there will be aggression towards Taiwan from China. So I don't know. I mean, I would be paying attention to what local government is saying.
Yeah, there's a couple things that I'd like to say about this. I did send you an email about this. I'm sure you get a lot of emails, so it's probably just lost in the weeds there. But I don't like the fact that China gets to have their, you know, state-run media and propaganda channels on Western social media like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. They have, you know, plenty of YouTube channels just spreading their propaganda. And yeah, I just checked on Facebook. Only one of their state-run media channels, just one, they have many, and just one has over 100 million followers on Facebook.
Mm.
And obviously they're not allowed to have, you know, any media channels that they don't approve of over there. So I just see that as like this unfair balance where they get to very successfully spread the propaganda outside their borders, but mm-hmm. not received the other way around.
That's a fair criticism.
Yeah. And it really affects the conversation publicly. And I just don't like that. I don't want to take up too much time, but I also just like to say that, the People's Republic of China, which is their official name, has never governed Taiwan in any century, decade, year, month, week, day, hour, minute, second in history. It's never happened before. And I send you an email suggesting an expert on the topic to maybe have on the show.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Daniel from Taiwan, thank you. You've said it all. Correction, Wolf Blitzer reported extensively from Ashkelon, but he was actually born in Germany. So I want to make sure that I clarify that just in the interest of clarity this evening. Let's go next. Where are we going next? Let's talk to Oz from Kentucky. Oz, it's been a while. What's going on?
Hello, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, lots been going on. I'm so happy that I was able to get through. So I decided to run for U.S. House of Representatives here as an independent.
Okay.
In my Kentucky 4, which I'll be running against Thomas Massie. That's who my representative is.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got the signatures required to get on the ballot, and I'll be going to Frankfurt to file this week. And I have a website, which is oz2022.us, which has my bio and platform on it.
How many signatures do you need? What I mean is, I know you got them, but how many signatures did you need to collect?
400.
Okay.
But I have about 100. I was going to try to get 1,000 just because the more the better, but I'm just running out of time because I have some other thing that I'm working on that I haven't been able to focus on because I've been trying to get these. And it's been really tough because I've only been doing it like one day a week when I'm off work.
Right.
To go signatures. And it's not, you know, I do that a similar, you know, I work for a union and I do similar things for the union and community organizing, but it is dangerous. I was had people try to assault me two different times while I was out canvassing.
Why would just collecting signatures made them want to assault you?
Well, the first one happened actually on Christmas Eve was when I started the whole thing of going getting signatures. And the first one was just like a random crazy, like crackhead guy. And he was shirtless and it was probably like 40 degrees out on Christmas Eve. And we were in front of a church and And he came up and he started harassing these elderly people and was trying to get into the church. And then he started yelling at me. And then he ran up and I happened to have bear spray like within arm's reach. And I blasted him in the face with it and was able to repel. Yeah. Wow. So that,
all right. Well, it sounds like a lot is happening. What's I don't want you to give me your full platform, but what's your main issue going to be for your campaign?
Well, the main issue is taking control of Kentucky's natural resources. And I want to see coal and everything and water and other natural resources socialized or nationalized. I prefer the term socialized because it's a little different, but people here don't really, that's a hot word, buzz. I try to avoid buzzwords like that that trigger people into not wanting to listen. But
sure.
And people like oligarchs like Mitch McConnell have controlled this, the natural resources here for 40 years, and they've been pillaging the state. And these natural resources belong to everyone, and they should be used to enrich the lives of the citizens, not line the pockets of the oligarchs. So that's one thing. And, you know, for criminal justice reform is at the top of my list. I myself being in recovery and being through the system, I know how corrupt it is. I want to see the change to the systemic problems that we have with our criminal justice system. And
well, those are worthy causes, Oz. Those are two. I know we don't have time for every campaign point. Are you thinking of a slogan? I think you could play off of Dr. Oz and kind of be like, I'm the Oz that won't recommend drinking silver or something like that. That could be cool.
I'll say that Twitter ain't big enough for both of us when it comes to Dr. Oz. I'll tell you that. My slogan's Get Smart Kentucky, because Kentucky needs to get smart and stop electing these people that are oppressing them.
Right. Wow. Well, Oz, we wish you the absolute best of luck. Keep us posted on the campaign, okay?
2022.us. Please check it out. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, there it is. Longtime caller Oz is running. They said to him, sir, will you run? And Oz said, yes, I will. So you guys can check that out. Let's take a very quick break. We're going to go right back to the phones after this short break. So don't go anywhere if you're holding on to talk to me. Let's keep it going and speak to more people. We've spoken to a number of really interesting folks already today. Let's go to, why don't we go to Enrique from Los Angeles, California, the City of Angels.
Hello, David. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Great. Cool. I just wanted to say that what's going on in Ukraine, it's really sad. It's horrible. And I really think that I just don't see how Putin's going to stop what he's doing. I think that he's crazy. He's a lunatic. And that he really I don't see how inevitably in the future, like, we don't go to war with him. I don't know. It's just pretty scary. I think he's going to hold the country hostage with his nukes. Like, he's going to threaten to use them, or he might even use them. I don't know. I think he's desperate. And it's a really dangerous
situation. I think you're correctly identifying that Putin's personality does not make him suited to just kind of say, okay, you know what? You guys are right. We're going to back off. It seems as though he needs either some negotiated off ramp that allows him to save face and at least come off like maybe he kind of won, or he's going to go down with the ship, you know, and that would be nuke usage, escalation of some other kind. I basically agree with you about the general concept here, which is Putin's not suited to just say, let's quietly end this.
Yeah. And then again, like I've said before, like, how are the difference between Republicans and Democrats? Donald Trump, right, got impeached over that phone call with the president of Ukraine, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was toying with them. He didn't want to help them. He wanted to get us out of NATO. He wanted to weaken it. How are they not using this? You know what I mean? Why are they not putting it out there? Trump literally was praising Putin in the beginning of his campaign. Hey, Russia, if you're listening, the emails, help me, blah, blah, blah. Paul Manafort working for him for free. All of these things regarding Russia. It's like right there, man.
Listen, and we've been trying. I mean, it's just, you know, Fox isn't going to talk about that. But yeah, of course, it's like Trump is now taking credit for arming Ukraine, when he delayed giving them those arms because he wanted dirt on Biden, but ultimately was sort of shamed into releasing the aid. Like, we're trying to talk about it, but you're completely right. It's not becoming the predominant story about what's happening there.
Yeah, man. It's just, I'm just really worried. It's a really nasty situation. Yep. And thanks for
It's hard to imagine it ending in any way that we would call positive. You know, I think it's going to end in a destructive way, one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, and just Putin just wants to rebuild the USSR. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Yep.
You know, he's just like Trump, ego. It's all about him. He's crazy. I mean, yep. The world doesn't want this anymore. The world is too civilized now, I think. And, you know, I don't think even China wants to, you know, reverse back to this type of conflicts in the war. You know, they want progress. They want to, you know, I don't know. This is just really bad. And I hope, thank God Biden is president. Mm. I mean, can you imagine?
Imagine if it was like Trump.
It would be, and then Fox would be defending Trump.
It would be crazy. It would be crazy. Yeah. We should be really glad.
Thanks for taking my call, David.
My pleasure. Everything's good in L.A.?
Well, gas is horrible. I have a truck. I have box trucks. So I have a tiny little family business. Mm. And over the last, you know, we were paying about $4 for the diesel like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Right now, my diesel is six something. I put gas yesterday. It's just, I don't know what's going to happen.
Your fuel costs are essentially up 50%.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, I live near a Costco here. Mm-hmm. I love Costco. And their gas is way cheaper, right? So I've been putting gas there for a long time and the lines are long.
Yeah.
Right now, even if you get there at 5:30 in the morning when they open up the gas at Costco, the line is around the corner of the block of Costco.
Wow.
It's just so bad. I mean, yeah, it's really expensive here, but you know, we got to do what we got to do, and we got to support Biden, and hopefully this works out well. But,
now, let me ask you just one other question. Do you pass along the increased cost? I don't know what you do with the trucks. I don't know if it's deliveries or what.
Deliver to Amazon's.
Oh, okay.
I deliver for clients. Yeah, to Amazon's.
Oh,
yeah.
So do you pass along the increased gas price to your customers, or do you just have to eat it?
The trucking industry has become really extremely lucrative when COVID hit. It just blew up. You know, the people at the ports, like I know all about that stuff. The truckers, the brokers, they're pretty much price gouging clients. And it's this whole thing. Since China is now able to pretty much, people in China can sit in offices and act like they have companies here in the U.S.,
right.
So they are making a lot of money. So in other words, like the client I have now, he's Chinese born, but he was raised here in the U.S. He has an Amazon business and he blew up. He's the millionaire now.
So it sounds like what you're saying, if I read between the lines, is you're already charging enough that the gas cost is annoying, but it's not going to break you.
No, I'm not, because I'm a small company.
Okay.
The bigger companies, since they have the leverage and all the trucks and everything with the ports, they're price gouging these guys. And I just did raise my price $40 per trip.
Okay.
But it's going to have to go up more. So yeah, it is. But it's going to end up with the consumer anyway. So we'll see what happens. But yeah,
all right, my friend. Well, keep it up. All right.
Thanks, man.
Okay.
And
we'll
I love your
to
show,
you soon.
Man. You're the best.
Thank you. Take care. There's Enrique from Los Angeles running a trucking business, Let's go to Eric from Colorado. Eric, you're on the air.
Hey, David, this is Eric.
Hey, Eric, what's going on?
Hey, so I kind of had a question, a little bit of what the last caller said. Where do you think that we would be if Trump was still elected and this war was still going on?
So I could give you some totally cartoonish thing where I could say, like, if Trump was president right now, he would be literally cheerleading Putin's invasion. No. I think here's the way I think this would have gone down if Trump were president when Putin invaded Ukraine. First, Trump would have done exactly what he did in the first couple of days. He would have said, Putin's smart, Putin's savvy, Putin's genius. Imagine that, what great land he's taking. He would have said that at the beginning. Then the entire world, including everybody around Trump, would have started to say, hey, you can't be praising Putin. Putin's choosing to do this war of aggression. Like, you got to back off of it. And much like Trump did at CPAC, I think Trump would have turned around and he would have started at least softly supporting Ukraine's defense of its land. But I think that when it comes to coordinating sanctions with our allies, the way that Joe Biden has been doing, Trump would just completely fail and the discussions would be a disaster and we would be humiliated and out of sync with our allies rather than under Biden. At least you could disagree with what's being done, but at least it's sort of like a coherent, united plan. I think that's what would happen under Trump.
Thank you. And do you think that like Russia would have probably done more if the United States would have been out of NATO under Trump still?
I mean, I don't know. I don't find tons of value in those that type of hypothetical necessarily. That requires a lot more differences and assumptions. I'm just not sure.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking my call, David.
My pleasure. There's Eric from Colorado with a very specific question. Let's go next to, is it Sarab from Austin? I know we've spoken before, and I think I messed up the name last time. Is it Sarab? Sarab from Austin, you're on the air. Well, I guess we will never know. We will never know. Let's go to Wynn from Indiana. Wynn, go.
Hi, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Awesome. So I have a question on economics again.
Sure.
So I'm currently taking macroeconomics and I've learned the effects of, you know, spending and saving. You mentioned a lot about the marginal propensity to consume.
Yes.
And the multiplier effect, the idea that if you stimulate the poor, that leads to an increase in GDP and, you know, economic growth and whatnot. But so my question is, the theory is that if you stimulate the poor, like demand, right, it assumes that prices are sticky, right, which is our like prices don't change in the long, like in the short term, I believe. So do you think in the real world prices are really sticky?
It depends on the industry and it depends on the time horizon. So, okay. I'll give you an example. So like, in the short term, if you take something like gas prices respond to demand. And they also, as we're seeing right now, gas prices respond to supply. But if you think about, for example, the type of demand changes that it takes to move gas prices, we had a pandemic where global air travel reduced dramatically. People driving reduced dramatically, and we saw gas prices go down. But for the most part, if we talk about some demand side stimulus for the lower middle class in the United States, the amount by which their demand for gas will increase is not really going to have an impact on gas prices. It's too modest. So that's an example of where the additional money to be able to, you know, maybe take a road trip or whatever, it will change the sort of life of the person getting the money and now having more money for gas without really changing the price of gas in a significant way. It's sort of like asymmetrical, if that makes sense. So I think the question is always of what good or service and over what time period is what we have to ask.
I see. So when we implement like specific policies, we have to look which industry. Right. And then because some demand side stimulus may be a negative, be a disadvantage towards some industry, too. Right. And would you consider that like good policy? Just the fact that it's affecting a different industry, let's say like the service industry or like the industry that is not really like a necessity.
So, well, it's getting a little bit muddled what you're saying. But I think the question you're sort of asking is, if we think about demand side stimulus as just being good because it gives people more money to spend on stuff, don't we also need to consider that increased demand as a result of those people having more money can increase prices and that might not be so good?
Yeah, that's much phrase.
It you really have to look at it more specifically. And you also have to remember that in traditional economic thinking, a little bit of inflation is considered good. You don't want too much right. inflation and you don't want deflation. And I've talked through the internal logic of that. So just because some demand side stimulus will cause a little bit of inflation also doesn't mean it's bad. I apologize because there's really not one answer to this.
Right. I agree.
But it sounds like you're generally understanding the concept, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, because I'm in like this, I don't know, like the middle phase, kind of like I don't know what to read or understand. And I'm just wondering, like, I want to find like the truth to this. But then there's a lot of economic data backing up the demand side stimulus. I mean, demand side policy.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you seem to be bringing the right amount of skepticism to the things that you're learning, which is fantastic.
Yeah. Awesome. And one really quick last question.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on saving and economic growth? Because there's also some data on that, like countries that save more they tend to have a higher economic growth. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, so there's a difference between the micro and the macro level. I mean, we've talked before about how given the option of giving a tax cut to a very rich person or a poor person, the rich person is more likely to just sock the money in a bank account because they don't really need that money to live, whereas the poor person is more likely to spend it. And the spending has a higher multiplier than the saving it in a bank account. So that's at like the individual level. At the same time, saving at the macroeconomic level, meaning how much is society saving in total, is a sign of economic health because it means you don't have a society with as many people on the brink of not being able to afford basic expenses. So when we think about who do we want to target for tax refunds or tax credits, we would have one answer to that. And we might say, well, just putting the money in a bank account is not so good as in terms of a multiplier. At the macroeconomic level, a higher savings rate within reason is a sign of economic health. So the answer is different depending on whether you're talking about macro or micro.
Okay, but if we're targeting, if we want, like, for the benefit of society, you know, obviously GDP is not everything, right?
No.
But, like, for the benefit of society, then probably tax cuts for the wealthy isn't really the best option currently.
That's what the data shows, yeah.
Okay, got it. All right, thank you so much, David.
All right, thanks, Wynn. Wow, Wynn with some of the meatiest economics questions we've had in a while. I absolutely love it. All right, everybody, we're going to go to a break. We will take calls again soon. Okay, it's time for the mailbag. We do receive about, I don't know, a few hundred emails a day, but each week I will highlight 8 to 10 of them and go over them with you. Sometimes there's interesting things. Sometimes there's nice compliments. Sometimes there's toxic attacks and pejoratives, a little bit of everything. You can email info@davidpakman.com, but make sure you have something really substantive to say. One person who did not have something substantive to say in any way is this person who actually sent us a message via Facebook, who said, "You, sir," at least they're being polite, "you, sir, are a vile and disgusting piece of S. Your views and opinions are treasonous and you should be locked in an effing loony bin alongside Biden and his whore vice president." This, I guess, is... well, this is a lot of different things. I guess it's also misogynistic we can't say what else it is. But it is very unhinged. We get hundreds of messages like this every day. And one of the really important things that we should remember is, you know, when people email me and they say politely, "David, don't you think you should do more to bridge the gap between left and right so that we can kind of get people on our side and in our way of thinking?" Yeah, I'm for that. When someone disagrees about the degree to which business should be regulated or what the tax rate should be or how far we should go in mitigating climate change, please, those are, you know, perfectly reasonable disagreements, policy disagreements, where we can have a conversation and each person explains where they come from and we might be able to change people's minds or have productive conversation at minimum. the person who sent this message, you can't have that conversation with them. There's nothing I can do to bridge the gap with this person other than to throw myself at their feet and say, I'm so wrong about everything I believe, and you're so right, and I'm such a, as this person says, a vile and disgusting piece of whatever. There's, some of these people are so far gone. There is no way to bridge the gap. And so we've got to go around them. They're not going to be with us. They're not, you, no matter what tone I adopt on this program, this person is not going to have a productive conversation. Okay. Next email from Jane about the outdoor ski resort mask policy in Canada. Jane said, I don't think you criticize the lack of masks at the indoor State of the Union address, or the fact that California lifted its indoor mask mandate on February 16th, but you did complain about the maskless snowboarder in Ontario. Do you honestly think there's a qualified non-political scientist who thinks masks should be mandatory outdoors at this stage for vaccinated folks? You claim to follow scientific advice, but you choose to disregard it when it doesn't suit your narrative. Listen, what on earth are you responding to, ma'am? I made clear when we looked at a video of a dad throwing a tantrum and having to be grabbed by five security people on an outdoor ski lift. I said in that he went there knowing that was the policy. I have said almost since the beginning of the pandemic, it started with, I don't know that we really need masks outside. And then we had data. And then I said, we definitely don't need masks outside unless people are literally on top of each other in you know, insane situations. I've said it from the beginning. And indeed, the State of the Union, the rules were you don't have to wear a mask. So, Jane, this isn't about my opinion about when masks are and aren't necessary. I've already said I don't think the masks outdoors are necessary because that's what the science has shown. The dad humiliating himself and his family throwing a temper tantrum because he wouldn't wear a mask. The problem is he's acting like a little kid, and he knew the rules. If I don't want to wear a mask somewhere, like, let me give you an example. At gyms, for the entire pandemic, you had to wear a mask, regardless of whether I thought it was necessary. And I basically did for the most part. I don't want to wear a mask while working out. So you know what I did? I canceled my gym membership. I'm not interested in working out and being on a treadmill with a mask on. But if I choose to go to the gym and I know what the rule is, I'm going to abide by the rule. The guy on the ski lift knew what the rule was and he ignored it. That's the problem. It's not about my opinion about masking. Thorkel wrote in and said, Jonestown was not a mass suicide. Criticizing me, I welcome it. This is at least the second time you talk about the mass suicide at Jonestown. It was not a mass suicide. You could maybe call it a mass murder suicide, but many argue it'd just be a mass murder. People were forced to drink the drink, and those who refused were shot. Calling it mass suicide sounds like everyone did it of their own free will. Yeah, this is fair. I should call the Jonestown massacre a murder suicide. There were a bunch of people there who willingly took the Flavor Aid or Kool-Aid or whatever it was because they had been brainwashed. They did take it willingly. Some did not, and some were shot. The children were forcibly injected with it. I will do better, Thorkel, and I will refer to what happened in Jonestown with Jim Jones in South America as a mass murder suicide. I appreciate the correction. Walter wrote in, said Biden will pardon Trump, and nobody's talking about it. I don't know about that. I don't think Trump's going to be charged with anything. So for that reason, I don't expect Biden to pardon Trump. But I know that at times past, there has been this idea in the United States that we don't go after former presidents criminally. And so we have seen pardons. But Joe Biden has given no indication that that's what he would do. Now, maybe Walter knows something I don't, or maybe Walter's speculating or whatever the case may be. But I have no reason to believe that Joe Biden would pardon Donald Trump if he were charged. I don't think Trump's going to be charged with anything, as I've said before. Haley wrote in, could Putin have dementia? She asks, hey, David, longtime fan of your show. In one of your latest videos, you talked about Putin being possibly terminally ill and that being a reason that he's attacking Ukraine. Do you think it's possible Putin has dementia? He seems to be overly suspicious of Ukraine and the West, like he is paranoid of everyone. What are your thoughts on this? There's no way. I mean, listen, delusional paranoia is sometimes a symptom of dementia. Sometimes they really are out to get you. Sometimes some combination of both. There's just no way to know. And I understand when you see these pictures of Putin at a 50-foot long table away from his own advisors, you think, well, either he's really afraid of germs or he's sick and whatever, or he thinks one of them may try to kill him. And that's paranoia. But I have to tell you, it doesn't seem completely unwarranted. I mean, it's conceivable. Maybe somebody would try to kill him. I don't know. So I think, Haley, as much as I appreciate the hypothesis or the idea, I just don't think there's any way for us to know right now. And it may be the type of thing that we could know in retrospect at some point in the future. Scott wrote in about the alt-left and says, I'm really glad that you're being authentic and speaking your mind against all sides that are counter to your ideals. Keep up the great work, and I look forward to seeing your show continue to grow. Yeah, you know, I've received a bunch of emails recently from saying, David, I really appreciate the courage to call out other leftists that you have. First of all, I don't really think that they're leftists, to be perfectly honest. Like, when I look at Tulsi Gabbard, what is there that's left? I mean, she's vaguely against wars, but, like, so was Trump, supposedly, you know? This is not a program where things are off limits or we have sacred cows or whatever. I just call things what they are. And it just so happens that with the Russia-Ukraine situation, a lot of these so-called leftists are saying very strange things. And so I'll tell you when I see that. Andrew wrote in about the word anomaly. David, I am a geologist who works in an industry that deals in anomalies. I am going to lay down the law and proclaim your original pronunciation is correct. The correct version begins sounding like the word anonymous. If anyone wishes to disagree with me, I challenge them to a game of Mario Kart. No, listen, I have to tell you, I'm getting a little sick of the anomaly thing. Go to the Merriam-Webster dictionary, type in the word A-N-O-M-A-L-Y, and you will see in the pronunciation section, both pronunciations are fine. Anomaly, like a garden gnome, anomaly. Both are fine. And quite frankly, I'm getting a little sick of having to defend that. Fred wrote in about Russian COVID. David, I hear so much about the Russian invasion, but one thing that's not mentioned, what's going on with COVID in Russia? And is it or could it be an issue? Has Russia solved the pandemic and needs something to fear? Or is the Ukraine invasion a distraction from COVID? No, there's still COVID in Russia. There is no reason to believe that we've gotten accurate data from Russia from the beginning. And I don't think it's transparent what is happening with COVID in Russia. But Russia has not solved COVID. But it seems completely reasonable that, like most of the world, not all of the world, but most of the world, there has been a two-month decline in COVID cases and hospitalizations and death. I would assume that's what's going on there, but I don't have any particular reason to think that COVID is, quote, over in Russia. And I don't think the invasion of Ukraine has anything to do with COVID. If you have a different perspective, certainly let me know. Reminder, we are launching the David Pakman Show coaching. This is an interesting new project we're doing. I am going to try to help others grow their online platforms. So if you are already a content creator, okay, if you're not, this isn't for you. This isn't to teach people how to start. If you are already a content creator and you have a YouTube channel with an audience or a podcast with an audience, and you're all good on the production side and you want to participate in some group coaching, I am going to be coaching 4, maybe 5 people in a group format. You can sign up at davidpakman.com/coaching. You have to be willing to have our coaching sessions filmed because then we're going to publish them to hopefully help even more people. Okay, that's the idea. If you're not interested, just don't do anything. I got 2 emails from people angry and they don't want to do it. But then don't sign up. If you don't want to be coached on growing an independent media platform, do nothing. Okay, but if you want to be, you can go to davidpakman.com/coaching, fill out that form. We've got a great bonus show for you today coming up right after this short break. Sign up at joinpacman.com to get access to the bonus show.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all RDJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
WRCT in sound from way out.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz.
Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Hello, my fellow Americans. I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Word to your mother.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
WRCT, in sound, from way out.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best,
The smoothest of the smooth. The cool.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.